buddies, Allison. Me, your host, is always Brian Dressel. With me, as always, is Joel Alex Wesker DeWitt.
There we go. You know, guys, it feels like it was just a few minutes ago that we were talking about the last movie.
Right? Like, time flies here, man. A whole week's gone by, and it feels like all I did was go refill my coffee.
Crazy. Like, do you remember that time when we recorded a podcast when I'd come over to LA? I flew back home, and then I flew back as well to the next week to record a podcast with you again?
You're out of your fucking mind, and apparently do not give a shit about your money. But, you know, that's you. And for those of you who don't know who that is, that's Matt Zombie Dog Dykes. Who was that supposed to be?
It's a sad dog, because it's the last one.
Oh, okay. You've been so, like, determined to get, like, dog characters, and I'm like, wait, what the
fuck? I ran out of talking dog characters. I can't do a perfect impression of Seth MacFarlane, so I can't do Brian.
I'm trying to think, like, what dog characters you could have forgotten, but, like, I really can't think of any. Unless you want to go
talk,
to, like...
It's actually very difficult, because I was searching, like, famous dog characters, like Snoopy doesn't talk.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Like, Pluto doesn't talk. Lassie doesn't talk.
You could do the dogs from the Homeward Bound movies.
There you go.
Chance and the other one.
Isn't that just doing an impression of Michael J. Fox, though? So, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm not an impressionist. I have a very select few people in my wheelhouse of that I can do impressions of.
Do Milo and Otis talk? I know one of them's a cat. I honestly don't know.
What about those people? What about the dots when all dots go to heaven?
Oh, yeah, they all talk and die. And, you know, yeah, super depressing.
And I can't remember their names, so maybe it's not the best poll.
Man, those are some bleak kids movies.
Old Yeller.
Oh, yeah, there's a good one. Arf, arf, bang. Ah, zombie dog, you're here.
they have something in common, at least.
Yeah, there you go. So here we are at the end of the Resident Evil film franchise. I'm a little sad to be at the end of it. I really, really enjoyed this rewatch. So being at the end is it's a bit of a bummer, but
it's gone so fucking fast as well. I mean, 6 weeks we've been recording these, and it doesn't feel like it's been 6 weeks.
No, it hasn't. And like that's coming off of like when we did Venture Brothers, I felt like Venture Brothers like holy shit, the end's already here, and we did like how many episodes of that? Like 55, 56?
Yeah, you were recording for about a year and a half, I believe.
Yeah, that one went for a while, and then even like Welcome to Your Doom ended pretty quick, but we did 2 episodes of Pop on that one, so that one
we kind of did. Well, they were 10-minute episodes.
Though, yeah, so. 11 minutes.
Yeah,
for
sorry,
this part of the kidnapping.
11 minutes. 11 and a half if you watch the credits.
That's true. God, that's such a good show. Except for the episodes that are bad.
I mean, the only really bad episodes were the spin-off with the 10-minute rape joke episode.
Oh, my 30
God. Seconds either side of that not being about rape.
We don't need to go back to that ever again. Resident Evil, the final chapter. Ugh. Here we are. So who's ready for a very quick breakdown? I'll do this one as fast as I can. So this movie picks up immediately somewhat after the last movie, where the last movie ends with a cliffhanger that Washington, D.C. is going to be a war zone. And then between movies, the war zone happens. And then this movie picks up just after the war zone's done. And Alice is in Washington, D.C. She's running away from dragon monsters that when their wingspan goes out, it's the umbrella logo. they fucking branded their monsters now.
Branded the apocalypse.
They did. But I gotta say, the umbrella wings, I kind of enjoyed. They're stupid, but that's kind of where I'm at with this whole movie. I'm like, wow, that's really dumb, but I enjoyed this one way more than 5. But I'll get to why in a minute. So she gets a message from the Red Queen, if you remember her, who is now a different Red Queen than what we established previously in the movies, and a different guy who made her than what we established previously in the movies. Just forget Resident Evil 2 to enjoy this movie.
No!
You have to, because the whole movie gets retconned in the opening the opening.
Right?
Monologue.
Right?
So just forget one. Resident Evil 2.
and it's like the longest preamble yet. Just
Well, because they have to replace whole movies now.
Yeah.
It used to be like, this is what you watched before, and now it's like, this is what you didn't watch, but what we're going to pretend you watched.
In an alternate universe, you watched this.
Yeah, this was the movie you watched, with these characters doing these things, not what you actually saw. So just bear with us, and, you know, here we go. So she gets a message from the Red Queen that in 48 hours, the scales will officially have tipped to zombies win, people die. How they can say that with only 4,000 humans left on the planet hasn't already tipped is beyond me, but, you know, that's up to them. They know more about it than I do.
Clearly. Yeah, isn't there like a minimum amount of people you need to repopulate the world? I feel like it's more than 4,000.
I think it's got to be more than 4,000. I think those 4,000 have to be near each other, because they keep saying, like, the last settlements, which assumes they're nowhere near each other. But getting too nitpicky on a movie like this, so let's just keep moving. She meets up with a team of people, including fucking Claire is back somehow. Her brother didn't make the cut, and we're not going to talk about him. But they need to go back to the Hive from the first movie. They need to get back down to the Red Queen, where they have the airborne version of the cure now, as opposed to the cure they had before that was an injection, and you just have to smash it on the ground just like the first one, and then the whole world will be cured. She finds Dr. Isaacs there. It turns out Dr. Isaacs that we killed before was a clone, and there's another clone in this one, but now we have the actual bad guy, and we find out that Alice is a clone of Elisa, which, if you hadn't guessed that by now, well, here you go. But I think we all guessed that by at least about partway through the last movie, right? We all kind of figured out, like, she's probably a clone.
Yeah, I got to the point where it's like, I think I actually said it, like, when I was watching part five in our chat. I said, oh, imagine if Alice had been a clone the entire time.
Yeah,
I kind of gleaned that back when we were at the clone slaughter at the beginning of the one movie. Yeah. Just like, how can you tell which one's which?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, I'm guessing she's a clone at some point. And then, yep, turns out she's a clone. And then the original Alice uploads all of her memories somehow to something that our Alice is going to be able to download.
Lens.
Contact lens somehow, whatever, it works. She has to go kill the actual Dr. Isaacs. She has to smash the vial. Wesker is back for some reason. I don't know why Wesker's in this movie, because he doesn't really do anything other than just kind of bitch and moan and get cut in half.
I mean, he's back so they can have so they can rip off RoboCop, essentially.
I guess, yeah. If they really want Wesker back, this is one I thought they'd do with him. But okay, I guess he's here as just a lackey now.
I think the main point that he exists in is that to keep the Red Queen from sort of enabling Alice to get through, right? Because he does the overriding, he does the controlling of the traps and stuff, and but not that meaningful of a character.
He's totally useless in this. But you know what? Again, whatever. And then she saves the day. That's pretty much it. And then all the T virus inside of her dies because. Clearly, that's what was going to happen. If anybody actually thought she was going to die at the end of this thing, I'd be surprised. The whole time it's going, like, we've already seen that T-Virus can be removed from her, like, no problem. So that's probably what's going to happen here. Oh, yep, that's what happened.
Yeah, Wesker did that with an injection.
Yeah, and then gave it back with another injection. And then she gets it removed this time through breathing stuff. Like, she has been infected, uninfected so many times at this point.
Well, he never actually gave her it back, did he? Because it was that throwaway line where he's like, oh, yes, I did betray you and didn't give you your powers back.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Guys, is this movie just Metal Gear Solid 4?
Yeah.
It kind of. It's also, and I want to get this out of the way before I forget it. It's also very Phantasm.
Yes.
And bear, like,
yes. No, I completely agree with you on that one. It's,
you
it's
see what I mean?
It's the Phantasm film that we never got as well.
Yeah. Like, so it's very, very Phantasm.
I'll go on a tiny tangent about this, and you can cut it down if needs be. But in between 3 and 4, a script was written called Phantasm Ends, and it was basically an apocalyptic world. There was two sides of America that were okay, and then the rest of in the middle was run by the Tall Man. It was called the Plague Zone. And the film was going to be about Reggie and a group of people. One of them was going to be played by Bruce Campbell, going into the Plague Zone to hunt down and kill the Tall Man and save Mike. And the world that was described, it sounds very much like the world that's in Resident Evil Final Chapter. And to the point where Alice at one point has a triple-barreled shotgun. And
yep.
My note is literally, Reggie's quad-barrel shotgun from Phantasm 2 is cooler.
There's a point when they're showing the world, I'm like, this world just feels like Phantasm to me. Like, the colors, the look of it. And then as I'm saying that, Chewie's like, why would you think Phantasm? There's nothing Phantasm. And then they hand her a triple barrel shotgun. I'm like, come on, really? And then at the very end of the film, Dr. Isaacs basically quotes the tall man. He's standing in the hallway. The tall man quote is, you've played a good game, boy, but now you die. And Dr. Isaacs is like, we've played a long game, but now you end. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is just Phantasm.
Oh, God. Can someone do like that face swapping app and just stick the Phantasm characters into this film?
Oh my! If you just swap out Dr. Isaacs with the tall man.
And Alice with Reggie.
No. I'm fine with Alice being versus the tall man. Like, that's actually a pretty good pairing. That's a pretty good fight right there. I'm so into it. I'm just so into bringing more Phantasm into everything. So this wasn't a critique. I'm not trying to be mad at the movie for it being very Phantasm. Like, I'm here for it. Because I think the first time I saw this movie, I hadn't done my Phantasm, like, marathons that I've done now. I've watched all those movies. I don't even know how many times now. But I only started watching Phantasm, like, 2 years ago. Like, when my son was born, I started watching these movies. So I hadn't seen this yet. So now, having seen Phantasm and then watching this movie, I got so much more out of it this time. I actually really enjoyed this movie. Like, that's where I'm coming at this one. I was like, I think it's pretty good. Is it as good as the first part, like the first half trilogy? Probably not. But it's definitely the best of the latter half.
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say it's the best of the last three. Even though, like, I was really annoyed with what they did with the opening. Like, you know, Wesker's betrayed you, but we're not going to show any of that. We're just going to tell you it. And,
So I watched the last movie. I watched the last movie and this one back to back, so I think that's why that didn't bother me as much, because the last movie felt like a real slow walk through mud for me, frankly. So, like, yes, it was stupid. Yes, it was annoying, but, like, I was ready for moving on and just hoping that the setup would still be okay, but...
And they just kind of make it work. It just kind of feels like, all right, so maybe we're shooting a little too high and there really wasn't a lot of movie with what we were doing before. Like, Alice versus monsters. Maybe we should kind of, like, make it a little better or a little different. And I appreciate that. My only major complaint with this movie is it's just complete throwing out the fucking window of all the characters that we've somewhat grown to enjoy. Yeah. Like, I can't say that, like, any of the characters beyond Alice are, like, fan favorites. Clearly, they think Claire is a fan favorite. I've never been a big Claire fan from the very beginning with Claire. I've always been kind of like, on her.
Either Alata is the only one who would keep coming back. She needed the work.
When Mila was originally talking about this film, she said everyone's coming back. So we're supposed to have. Apparently, the original script had Ada, Leon. Everyone who's alive at this point was supposed to come back in some way or another. And then when they got shooting, they're like, Claire's coming back. Claire and? Claire will be back. And it's just like, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what's going on with Jill and trying to solve the Jill question. And then she gets cured at the end of the last movie and then just forgotten. We spent how many, way too much time going like, where's Kmart? We lost Kmart. Doesn't anybody love Kmart? And I guess Kmart got killed on the boat in the beginning of 5. Like,
how did Claire survive that boat in the beginning of 5?
No idea.
There's no explanation
made
on that.
Here she is.
There's not even a throwaway line of like, I swam to safety.
Like, just give us like, Chris sacrificed himself so I could live. Even that would be enough. Be like, so there goes Chris. Yeah. And I guess now we know why Claire's here. But they it's just like, do you want to explain it at all? Nah. Are you sure? Yeah. It's just like, okay.
And we touched on this last week a tiny bit, but the girl that was supposedly Alice's daughter
has
never seen, like, all this prior movie that she has staged as this, like, important thing worth saving. And it's just out the window.
No mention of her at all.
None whatsoever. Just gone.
Well, it's because they cast Miller's daughter as the Red Queen. That's why. They didn't want Miller's daughter being jealous of another girl, probably.
I mean, you might be right there. Or it could just be like, well, do we really need both?
Yeah.
No, probably not. The Red Queen's probably like, that's more fan service-y anyway, so let's just stick with the Red Queen. And I get it. Like, it makes sense. It's just kind of frustrating. It's like, well, we already had the Red Queen in the first movie. Then we had the person the Red Queen was based on in the second movie. So we've already kind of explored this. But then the beginning of this movie is just like, no, that was that didn't happen. Nope. Nope. It was this person, and it's this Red Queen. And it's like, but I saw those movies. I clearly remember watching them. And it's like, no, you're wrong. Nope. Nope, fuck you. And it's like, okay. And that's kind of what you have to do throughout the whole movie, is just kind of go, well, okay. And if you're willing to do that with this movie, I think you're good to go. And dialing back to my Phantasm reference, you have to do that throughout the entire Phantasm franchise. In the middle of movies, you have to go, well, fuck it, okay.
So do you think it's just so long between the movies that came out that they just assumed people would forget details and accept what they are fed in the beginning?
Part of me wants to say yes, but at the same time, like, I was a fan of these movies as they were coming out. Like, I got really into the fanfare of it. Like, as Mila is very, like, fan-focused, so is Paul W. Sanderson. Like, they're just such fun people to, like, follow on socials. Have you ever seen them interviewed? Like, they clearly just love what they do, and they're so aware of how lucky they are to be able to do this. Like, because nobody else gets to make these sorts of movies for this budget and actually have them be successful and make many of them.
Sure.
That doesn't fucking happen. It's just these two people. So, like, they're so, like, fan-focused and fan-forward and just appreciative, wonderful people that it's just like, but you know we love this stuff. And you're just saying, no, just ignore it. We're just going to do this other thing. And it's like, okay, what you did was still fun, but I kind of wish you hadn't just forgotten the other stuff at the same time. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not mad at the movie. Like, I still think it's a good movie. I just,
yeah,
it's tough to let go of the baggage that we are carrying into it.
Yeah,
no,
it's
I don't.
When you have a sequel that just completely ignores everything that's come, you kind of like, well, are you actually a sequel, or are you just trying to be your own thing? And you just saying you're a sequel.
I don't disagree with the critique. I'm just so broken from what Resident Evil's done to me for the last five movies that I've come to accept this is part of what it is.
And I think I'm there, too. I was not there the first time I saw this in theaters. I was very mad about everything the first time I saw it in theaters. And, like, going home, like, being upset about this movie, now, years later, I'm like, what the fuck was I doing with my time? Like, this is the thing I choose to get mad about? Like, this is a fine movie. It's just stupid fun the whole way through. And no one treats it like that. Like, that alone makes the movie better than it should be. The fact that Mila's doing her damnedest to do a great performance, and it comes through. She does a great job. Like, that alone is like, okay, maybe these, yeah, they're stupid fun, but nobody's treating it like it's stupid. They're giving it time and effort, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And the makeup, absolutely. The makeup's really good on it as well. Like, you know, when they have her in that old lady makeup, it's fucking good. It looks like, you know, her when she's 100, I assume.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mila's probably still going to look like Mila when she's 100, because, good lord.
Yeah. Because she's not human.
Well, she's clearly infected with a T-virus. Like, I don't think she'll ever admit to it, but they clearly have some version of a T-virus that keeps somebody from aging, and she's fully indoctrinated. That's not true at all. She actually did a week-long thing on her Instagram about how she takes care of her skin, because some person asked. And she's like, I started writing out a post, and then I realized it's a little long and crazy, so I'm just going to do a week-long thing. I wish I had that kind of time.
Yeah. That sounds like way too much effort.
Yeah.
I suppose when it's your job, you make time for it.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's like, I'm not judging. I get why she does it, and it pays. She looks great. So, you know, good for her. But there is just something like with these movies, with her and Paul being involved from the very beginning to the very end, there is just something that's really kind of cool and personal about them. So even if there might be like flubs like the last movie, I think this one does a good enough job landing this kind of like crazy plane, if you will. Like, it's like it might make some mistakes, it might make some stumbles, but it's like, we're just going to kind of take this like rat's nest of chords that's before this movie, straighten it out into one thing, and we're going to land the plane how we want. And it's like, we could take time to try to interweave all this mess before us, or we could just kind of do our own thing and just have the best possible movie. And I think that's what they went for, and I think that's probably the right choice. It just, it bumps me a little at the same time.
Sure. I can see that.
Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. It's like, when I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, this is just, there's something off about it. And I think it was the fact that they were retconning so much from all the other films. It just felt a bit odd. It didn't really feel properly like a sequel. I mean, it's like Dr. Isaacs comes back, and like, If I remember right, the last time we saw him, he was in turned into a monster and then killed.
And yeah, there's, he got muffled.
Right. Yeah, there's right. There's no real explanation of how he came back.
Well, that one was a clone.
Yeah, I get that, but like when he's actually back there, there's no explanation. Like, you know, it doesn't say like, oh, that was a clone or anything like that. I don't remember him saying that.
She does at one, like they're talking, she's like, oh, I killed your clone, didn't I? And he just kind of smirks.
Right, yeah, and there's even right. a few of them outside of that prior to that yeah, appear, and yeah, so it's, oh boy. You know, I forgive a lot of this because at the end of the day, this is Alice's journey throughout all these movies, and you have to sort of just accept that. And I know that there are key characters throughout these movies, but so many are cannon fodder that, you know, it's, if their goal was to tell a conclusion to her story, then they succeeded.
Exactly.
You know, I can see why people are disappointed about not having wrap ups for every other character. That would be more like Metal Gear Solid 4, like I said. But this movie doesn't also have the benefit of like 25 hours of cutscenes to explain everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this movie feels like it feels like prioritization. Like how do we prioritize the best possible thing for our fans and for our story? And it just feels like that's what they went for. So it's tough to really knock it too hard. But there is still, it's impossible to watch without just the tinge of disappointment for those other characters, for those other storylines. But I think ultimately, I think you're right, Joel. I think it was, they made the right call.
It's odd as well because there's little bits of it where you think, hang on a minute, it feels like those characters have flipped a little bit. So like Dr. Isaacs, when we first see him, he's kind of a lackey to Wesker in a way. And then the tables have turned, like, Wesker is now all of a sudden just a lackey to Dr. Isaacs.
Yeah. Well, that's finding out that the Isaacs that we knew before was a clone, so he was a lackey to Wesker, but the actual Dr. Isaacs is his boss. And it's just like, the fact that you have to do these many leaps is like, it feels kind of like the movie's like, that's up to you, man. You can either go along for the ride or you can try to dissect it. We gave you some things to dissect it, but if you really want to, go ahead.
I do feel like that is one of those bait and switches that doesn't feel great. Like Wesker, Wesker is the omnipresent antagonist throughout all these movies, and then having been relegated to a grunt is kind of disappointing in some ways, even as we've been sort of making fun of him and joking about how bad of a character he is. And granted, Isaac is a great character in this movie. He's just a force to be reckoned with in all sorts of ways. And the fact that they have him as like several different versions, one of them being kind of a religious
cult,
you know,
leader, basically.
Kook. you like see different sides to his character too.
And that character felt like he was lifted straight out of like Land of the Dead, like the Romero movie. With John Leguizamo, yeah, I can't say his name right now, but him in it as well. it felt like a character from like that world, but I was still kind of fine with it.
Mm.
It just kind
of
worked.
I think every end of the world story has that religious cult whack job in, and I think the Resident Evil films had not done that up until this point, and I feel like it may have been maybe it was a thing of like, oh, we've not done the religious cult leader thing. Well, this is the last one. Let's throw in Dr. Isaacs as that. And then, you know, because I think you could have done away with that religious cult leader aspect. And you wouldn't have had to change that much at all. You know, you could have still just been following around with the little tanks and stuff like that. It gives the character a little bit more flavor. But it does seem to come out of nowhere that all of a sudden is this religious cult whack job.
See, it didn't really bother me, and I'm trying to frame this in the world of like just timing. So this movie came out in 2016. At this point, Game of Thrones is hot and heavy. Like, people love Game of Thrones, and they have this old Game of Thrones actor who was in this franchise before, and then we have this other guy who keeps playing this kind of ridiculous version of Wesker. So the movie just kind of went like, all right, well, we have Ian Glenn, who's already been a part of our franchise. Let's just refocus on him because people love him.
Yeah.
And let's just put him in the movie as much as possible. Can he play two characters? Fuck it. Why not? And it's like, okay.
Yeah, you've got Ian Glen, or you've got the guy playing Wesker, who's, for some bizarre reason, dressed in all leather in this film. And, yeah. I mean,
his costume in this one's about as good as Alice's in the last one. It's just like, what are you wearing? At least he doesn't have, like, weird windows on his hips just to show, like, yep, she's not wearing underwear. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess I needed to know that movie.
I mean, honestly, I'd have applauded them for doing that, to be honest. A bit more equality.
So yeah, Brian right? wants Wester in a paper dress.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's what the movie was missing. That's what it was missing.
Honestly, that would have been freaking brilliant if they did that.
Yeah, I would have gotten a good laugh.
That would have been amazing.
It's like, what? It worked for Alice. It must be something good.
I want the roles reversed the whole way, though. I want Wester on the floor in the paper dress, and then I want Alice sitting up the top and just torturing him. Just go full circle with that.
That would be pretty cool, to be fair.
Really quick, just because I wanted to mention it before I forget, the Red Queen in this thing, her next film, she's playing young Black Widow. Pretty cool.
Oh, really?
I nerd out about that stuff. I really want Milla Jovovich in either a DC or Marvel movie. I think she'd be amazing in them, but it's not happened yet. So the fact that her daughter's at least in one is making me a little happy.
Can you imagine?
You think maybe
if they did the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the early 2000s, how like Milla would have been Black Widow for certain.
She would have been Black Widow. Yeah, absolutely.
I was just saying she's probably almost too high profile at this point to fit in, because Marvel really loves to find people who are good actors but have not made it big yet. From what I've seen.
All but at the good same actors time, who they have like been big their, like, and then have thought, like, had the dip in the popularity and, you know, yeah, that's the film that right. brings them back up.
Right.
They could throw in a villain role like they did, like, I'm blanking on, like, Annette Bening sort of thing. Like, Annette Bening's an Academy Award winner. They could throw Milla in, like, something like that. She's not an Academy Award winner. There's room for Milla in the MCU is all I'm saying.
Yeah. But you don't want her as a one-off, do you?
Honestly, I'd be fine with it.
Really?
I just want her in an MCU movie. I want to see her play like a legit comic book character,
play
not the one from fucking Hellboy, because that was just a disaster of a movie, and it was not Milla's fault.
She could play Lady Death.
She could. She could play a lot of roles. She's great. What have we missed in this movie? Like, what haven't we talked about? We haven't really talked about the red shirts. Ruby Rose shows up in this thing. I really enjoy Ruby Rose. And she didn't really do much. She just kind of showed up and went, that fan looks dangerous, and then was killed by that fan.
I mean, there's the whole action sequence in general when they're going to be fighting off the zombie army with the, you know, religious Isaac kind of leading the charge against them in that tower.
That
whole sequence is a great action sequence, has nice suspense. I think it works really well.
Yeah, I do like the throwing the flaming barrels as well. It's very cool.
Yeah. Honestly, my favorite action sequence in the whole movie is pretty much right out of the gate. And it just kind of felt Mad Max-y. It's when she's in the trap and she's hanging upside down by like the thing around her leg, and she still manages to kill everybody all around her.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a really well choreographed sequence, because at no point are you going, I mean, the logical part of your brain is probably going bullshit, but the way the movie's shot, and granted, it's a little too cutty. The whole movie's a little too cutty for my taste, but whatever.
I had picked up on that as well, actually. It felt over-edited.
Yeah, there's the cuts are a little mad, but I can forgive it, whatever. At least it's consistent, so I'll give it that much. But the whole time, it's like, I never call bullshit. I'm never like, well, Alice would have died right there for sure. It's like, no, they did this well enough where I'm like, I'm buying everything she's doing and that she actually survived it. It's a really cool sequence.
Yeah, in the context of these movies and action movies in general, they work. Like, the starting fight sequences work well, because it's not so out there that you can't sell somebody on it.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that they got their, quote-unquote, their mojo back for this one. Because, like, the last movie, beyond the few sequences I think we listed out, there's a lot of moments where, like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Or a lot of moments where it's just literally shooting at each other and nothing happened.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and this one I don't think ever dipped into that realm of like, why this now? Like, even like her crazy like Mad Max-esque car chase with the umbrella monster. I'm like, nah, this is all kind of cool, and I'm enjoying it. Like, I like the whole monster coming through the roof and like picking up the car, but he's fucked up the car so bad that the car can't support its own weight, so the roof just rips off and she lands and is able to keep driving. I'm like, nah, I'm into this. This is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I did like how Claire was like, she's like, no, Alice, you can't sacrifice yourself to save everybody. It's like, no, you're... What? And then my favourite thing about that, though, was the fact that like Claire really didn't take much convincing to go around to Alice's side in the initial conversation. So she's basically like, no. And then Alice basically winced in pain a little bit. And then she's like, okay, I'll help then.
I mean, to be fair, from both sides, Alice's point of view is like, one person for the all 4,000 left? Yeah, I think it's probably worth it. We should probably make sure at least these people don't die. Mm-hmm. But from Claire's point of view, who the fuck else is going to fight these things? Because so far there's been you and, well, everyone else died.
Yeah.
But so Claire's point is stupid, because if she gets the cure out, they all die.
But then they don't, because they want to have a good, like, yeah, maybe we'll make another one moment of, like, yeah, it's going to take forever for the cure
really
to reach all corners of the
that.
Planet.
Yeah. Because it's like the whole thing of it is there's a countdown time to when they're going to be overrun. All right, I'll break it. I've done the cure. It's fine. Oh, yeah, it's going to take a while to get around the earth. So all the colonies have fallen then.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. You don't want to just end, but maybe you should have just ended. Like,
yeah.
Like, would it kill you to do like a Last of Us Part 2, like colony sort of thing? Like, you don't have to go any farther than Last of Us Part 2. Be like, oh yeah, I live in Colorado now, and like these are our crops, those are our animals. We're making it work. Like, I would have been fine with that ending.
Yeah.
So the end of WALL-E.
Yeah, the end of WALL-E, but you know, like 6 months down the road. Like, I would have been fine with like 6 months past the end of WALL-E, and like you could have brought the daughter back. Like, yeah. Oh look, hey, look, she's okay. We didn't completely forget about her.
There's Chris. And what is Chris holding?
Chris. And look, we opened up a Kmart in reference to our friend Kmart.
And it's just her face. Her actual face, though. They went and found the body and... No.
No, too bleak. Too bleak. Far? This is a happy ending.
Too Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so I think that's pretty much everything. Let's move into the best kills.
Well, there's one thing that we haven't touched on. Project Cerberus. Anyone here?
I didn't want to bring it up. We joked about it earlier.
I was so excited, though. I was so excited to see three-headed zombie dogs. And no, it was just a lot of zombie dogs. That's not Cerberus.
I feel like... here's my guess, and I'm going to do zero research to clarify whether or not I'm right. But I'm guessing... They wrote the script. All right, release Project Cerberus. We're going to have all these three-headed dogs, and they're going to fuck shit up. And do you want monsters? Like big lickers, or do you want three-headed dogs? Oh, well, the big lickers look really cool. Okay, you can have regular dogs then. Oh, but we already have him saying Project Cerberus. People won't care. And here we are.
I mean,
yeah.
Umbrella is a multinational corporation, and multinational corporations like to... project name things with cool stuff. So
that's very
they probably
true.
Went they probably went like, okay, this is Project Zombie Dog Wave. Nah, that's too wordy. Project Cerberus. Ooh.
All right.
I like it.
Did anyone pick
Sold.
Up did anyone else pick up on the fact that Wesker's been watching Star Trek or Doctor Who though?
I mean, no, what else is he doing with his time?
Reverse the polarity of the turbine.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's like every sci-fi anything. They even do it in Ninja Turtles like 50,000 times.
Yeah, it just made me laugh because of like when we did the Doctor Who and we like that whole thing about when
you're both, confusing the polarity.
Yeah. Both reversing the polarity.
Oh man. All right, so let's do best kills, and I'm gonna go first this week because I've already kind of mentioned mine. And it's Ruby Rose. It's so like it almost feels like they're mad at her. Like she's the producer, quote unquote, in this one. It's just like, all right, so here's a big people grinder. She's gonna be nervous about it. She's gonna flip off the camera, and then she's gonna go into the people grinder. It's just like this scene is really mad at Ruby Rose for some reason. But it's still a cool sequence, and it reminded me of Tokyo Tribe. Listen to Behind the Hype to hear about that. And that's mine. Matt, you're up.
So mine was like, when I wrote it down, I thought it was a kill. And technically, it's not a kill. But it's where Alice puts the grenade in Dr. Isaac's pocket. And it's just the look of realization when he realizes what she's done. And then it goes off. I just thought it was so cool. And I was a bit gutted that wasn't actually how he died. And he somehow manages to survive and come back to get her.
He's a Terminator, apparently. He rebooted. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was really cool. So then, like, for an actual kill, though, I'll go with the Wesker one, just because, like, completely ripping off RoboCop of where she goes, Wesker, you're fired. And then, like, the Red Queen just, like, closes a door on his leg and, like, just, like, slices it off. And he's just left there just going, nyeh.
And I love, like, they give him, like, the dead drop thing. And I also love the, what's going on? You're dying, Wesker. Get on with it.
Yeah. Fucking love that line. That was such a good line.
Those are both great moments. The Alice versus, I can't remember his name now. Isaac. Alice versus Isaac segment's great because so much of this movie, Alice is such a badass, and like she overpowers almost everything. And that was one of those moments, kind of like in the last movie at the end, where she is just getting destroyed, and she uses she uses her cunning to, you know, do a quick like slip in and you know fool him. You know, so it's like
she lets her fingers.
Yeah. Exactly, she lets herself get mutilated for the sake of beating this guy. And it's just it's so much cool.
So what's your best kill, Joel?
My best kill is probably going to be the flamed waterfall.
What? Fucking hell!
Are you gonna tell me there's something wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with it. I like the name of it, the flamed waterfall.
I mean that's pretty much what it is.
You're not wrong. I just haven't.
Firefall, is that better?
No, I like flamed waterfall. Yeah. I like it.
Flamefall.
It sounds like a good look. Yeah, it's good.
But it is one of those, like, for a movie that doesn't have a lot of flashy moments, that is a big moment that I think it pays off. You know, it just works really well.
How much of the budget do you reckon went onto that one sequence?
Probably at least 5 Axemen.
Yeah. Oh, I can't get any Axemen in this one. Damn. You know, Firefall.
I mean, that fire looks very realistic as well. I mean, I know we've come a long way with CG fire, but it's still quite difficult to make look realistic, especially when you look at, like, when it's done badly. But that fire, it looks so real when it's going down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, this is it for today. Best Alice moment in the final chapter. Joel, you're up first.
I think when she finds out that she's a clone. I think the sort of existential crisis she goes through during that moment is just so evident in the way she portrays it. And it just, you know, it's another example of her doing acting very well.
Yeah.
Although I just to play devil's advocate for 1 second, and it's just kind of a ding against the movie. Yes, I agree with you. She nails that scene, and that scene is great. But she goes through an existential crisis for a moment.
I do agree. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Yeah, but I will forgive it.
But I'll forgive it too. It works, but it's a very short existential crisis.
Her acting is superb in that whole sequence, though. Like you can see it in her eyes, and you know, like really great actors will act with their eyes, and I think Mila does it really well in that sequence. You know,
she does great. My best Alice moment, I actually think she does a really good job throughout this entire movie. Like, I think you could tell Mila was feeling this one, so I don't think she ever really does a bad thing in this movie. I think she's kind of on point the whole way through. But for character wise, I'm gonna go with her fight against the umbrella monster in the beginning. I really like that car chase. That's where I started getting the whole Phantasm vibe. I like the way this car chase is shot. It feels very much like the way car chases are shot in Phantasm. And that's where I started cluing into it. And since that's what kind of piqued my interest for the rest of the movie, I think that's where my best Alice moment would be too.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
For me, it's where she kills the umbrella operatives when she's snagged upside down. I just think that whole sequence is very, very cool. Like, again, it's like it's quite elegant and dance-like, and you know, Mila does those sequences really well. Like, she just has a very good handle on that sort of action scene. It, you know, always comes across very elegant. And there's always one in each of those films. And I just think, you know, this was the last one, and I think they did a superb job with it. And like with it ending up with her just shooting the thing away at the end as well after she's killed everyone. I just think it's brilliant.
Yeah, she crushed these movies. Like we'll get into it in our wrap up week, I'm sure. But man, she fucking nailed these things.
One thing that I did really like, I just spotted it in my notes. One thing that really felt a bit odd about this one though is that end bit where Alice is having that really emotional moment when she's getting all the memories and everything, and then you realise that Claire's just sat on a rock watching. And it's just so odd. When I noticed in that the big wide shot that Claire's just sat there watching on a rock while she's having this that huge emotional moment, and it's just a bit like, yeah, go away, Claire. It's a bit...
That, I don't disagree with you. It doesn't really bother me, though. All right, I think that's pretty much it. I think we covered it. I'm a little sad. But we do have one more week that's coming up. Let's talk about that first really, really fast. So maybe next week, it's going to depend on Graham. We want to get Graham back for our wrap-up episode. Wouldn't feel right without him. And since he just moved, we have to wait for his scheduling. So it might be next week. It might be the week after. We're going to do our wrap-up like we did with Frisky Dingo and Venture Bros. We're going to get together. We'll do a good listing episode. We're going to rank the movies. We're going to rank our best moments, our best Alice moments, best kills. We'll go through all of it. We'll have a good Resident Evil party. And to cap it all off, we're going to do the first half to talk about what did they do after Resident Evil. And we're going to spend the first half of that episode talking about Monster Hunter.
Yes.
Which everyone has pitched to me as Resident Evil, but just not Resident Evil. Like, it's still the same franchise, still the same people, but it's just not the same game anymore. And I haven't watched it yet. I know Joel saw it. I'm very excited to get into this one. I'm pumped. So we're going to do, it'll be a nice long episode, probably about an hour, maybe hour and a half. We'll do the first half on Monster Hunter to kind of to get us in the zone, and then we'll wrap up Resident Evil, and that's how we'll say goodbye to Alice in Zombieland. And then coming up after that, there'll be something else. We haven't figured it out yet. We're working on it. Let's do our actual plugs. For me, Behind the Hype every Thursday, Demon Days every Wednesday, and then be sure to listen to Damage Boost on Tuesdays. And that's it for me. Joel, what you plugging?
I am on a podcast called Super GG Radio. It's about video games and other bullshit. I am also on a podcast called Afterthoughts. My wife and I do basically a book club. Check us out on YouTube and Twitch, because Alex is pushing hard on the video content, and we'll be turning that out more and more.
Very cool. Matt, check out your articles on ATH.
I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth.
It's like, I know what you're going to say.
I don't say anything else because I've got nothing else new to plug.
Well, maybe by next week. Maybe. Who knows? And if not,
maybe.
It's fine too. That's all of it. So I guess it's time to say bye. Bye? Bye?
Bye.
How about later?
Bye.
Bye?
I'm doing a deep voice for bye. Very
bye.